Yes, it's a complex structure because horticulture is a complex industry. The constitution of Howard was put together some 14 years ago, and it contemplated that because of the diversity in horticulture, it needed advisory panels that were made up of members of the horticultural industry and with a very strong, obvious representation from the peak bodies, who are the people who actually get the levies up in the first place, so they have a direct interest in it. But in that structure, of course, there is an inbuilt conflict of interest. There often is in agriculture in many structures. The inbuilt conflict of interest is associated with ownership, advice, and provision of services to the organisation.
Yeah, so 37% of the funds now go through the peak industry bodies as projects to be managed. Has that been a good result for research in this country?
Generally, yes. If you have a breakdown of the money that goes through to peak industry bodies as service providers, much of it is associated with extension services and communication services. And over the last 14 years or so, obviously, as you're probably aware, a lot of those services have been wound down by a lot of agencies who would normally have done that. So in many cases, the peak industry bodies have stepped in to fill that void. Some of the contracts with the peak industry bodies are associated with consultation funding. That's actually constitutionally part of our organisation. We don't know who the levy payers are. We contact and consult through the peak industry bodies, and we pay them consultation funding. So that's another source of income for them. And the third area, of course, is project management that may or may not be related to the marketing and R&D program. That's not universal inside HAL. Some peak industry bodies are more involved in the R&D program than others, and that's obviously historical or capability-based.
Small and large horticultural sectors, including Costa, Australia's largest producer, sweet potato growers, herb growers, plus researchers are all highly critical of a lack of transparency by HAL in how it makes its decisions. What do you think? Is that a fair criticism?
Look, I think that's a fair concern that they should always have. In terms of it being a fair criticism, I think the transparency is pretty much available to be examined at any time inside HAL. The moves we've made more recently, and I must state that I think over time, the materiality of 37% of our expenditure being conducted through the peak industry bodies has created a materiality issue with respect to conflict of interest.
Explain the materiality. Do you mean financial?
Yeah, a materiality in the sense that as it was 14 years ago, the total expenditure was really based just on consultation funding, then it would have been a much smaller proportion. But now, particularly as there's been gaps appear in the marketplace in terms of service provision, and also the peak industry bodies have become more sophisticated and capable, the number is higher. Per se, that is a materiality issue, and people should have a good look at it.
Let's take a case in point. With the sweet potato levies, they've paid, they say, $6 million in levies, and we have a document from the Department of Agriculture showing that. But they say they've received $2.2 million in research funding directly into sweet potatoes, a third of what they've paid into researching their sector. What do you say to that?
Well, I've not seen that document, and that's not a communication that's been made to me.
But is that fair that they should receive a third of what they've paid in levies in direct research into their issues, whether they be soil diseases or pests?
What I would say is that there are proportions. I don't know how they got that figure, but there are proportions of levy funds that contributors should expect to be directly invested back into their sector. For their sector alone. But there are also, in any industry, there are proportions of expenditure that are invested in across industry and multi-industry projects, or projects that are associated with issues of national interest. So I'd need to see the breakup of that, but no one will get exactly back invested solely and purposefully in their sector to the exclusion of everything else, exactly what they put in.
Likewise with herbs, parsley growers say they've paid in the order of $1.5 million over 20 years almost, and $175,000 has come back in research projects for parsley. Is that fair?
Well, if that were solely the case, that would not be fair. But again, I'm not aware of that particular calculation they've done. I'd like to know exactly how it's done. And I would also make the point that not everything they contribute will come back to parsley alone. It often comes back to the horticultural industry, or it comes back into projects that are to the benefit of a broader section of horticulture, some of which parsley may benefit from.
These two sectors specifically have lobbied the department and have campaigned actively to get more research levies collected and spent in areas they need. So for sweet potatoes, it's marketing. They wanted to collect a 0.5% levy to collect $500,000 from growers so that they could market sweet potatoes. That was actively lobbied against by AusVeg. Likewise, parsley growers wanted to have a herb research fund collected, managed through HAL, and it was actively lobbied against and cancelled by DAF in 2010. What do you say of the power of a peak industry body to actively campaign against the interests of some growers?
Well, I have no comment to make on it at all, because, Serena, you'd be aware that the actual existence, the conceptualisation, the consultation, the formation and the legislation associated levies is constitutionally not part of HAL.
Who made the decision in the vegetable sector to shift the focus of spending to 75% on marketing and 25% of the levies on research?
Certainly the program that led to that split was initiated by the HAL board. The HAL board insisted that the vegetable industry conduct an independent strategic plan for the R&D investment. That was conducted by an external firm. It took quite a period of time, and I will say it's probably entailed probably more consultation across Australia amongst growers than I've ever seen in any other industry for the formation of a strategic plan. That strategic plan basically said that whilst R&D is very, very important, increasing expenditure in R&D was not delivering the significant competitive advantage required for the vegetable industry to prosper. To put it in more crude sense, being 5% better at killing bugs every year still meant that most vegetable producers could not compete against imported product.
With that 75% marketing, 25% on research spending, researchers say valuable intellectual property and research programs have been lost. Does that matter?
It certainly does. And that's always a balance that has to be taken into consideration when allocating expenditure. There is a balance between delivering value, immediate value in some cases, if that's what the levy payers want, or more long-term value with respect to the R&D investment, and maintaining capacity out there with respect to R&D. There's never a simple solution to that. But if you asked most levy payers at the moment, they would say their job, their levies would be best spent solving the problems they have today.
The Victorian government has said that it does not co-invest in vegetable industry research anymore, but continues to heavily invest in dairy, in grains, and in meat through those research and development corporations. Is it a worry to you that AusVeg specifically has put the Victorian government offside?
The issue of AusVeg and its relationship with the Victorian government is not a matter for me, but what I would say is that the R&D program that's conducted by the Vegetable Industry Advisory Committee has robust capacity to take on any number of R&D projects. In fact, it's in an extraordinarily healthy state in terms of its balance at the moment, whilst also accommodating the research that needs to be done to find new markets with respect to marketing and also the market access issues associated with it. Unfortunately, in the horticultural industry, one would like everyone's relationships to be perfect, but that's not often the case.
Given the Productivity Commission has said that government matched funding is not well spent if it's on marketing, because ultimately that goes to benefit individual companies, where do you think Horticulture Australia Limited stands with that division of funds to marketing and not research.
Yeah, look, could I just correct something here? There is a marketing, if a industry raises a marketing levy, that is spent on marketing in the sense of customer acquisition activity. But there can be a lot of R&D activity associated with forming new markets. And in the case of the vegetable industry, that is where the R&D activity is taking place. So researching a lot of markets, researching the type of market access activity that needs to take place, researching what the barriers are, for instance, to get product into China or to Taiwan or to Korea, is legitimate R&D activity, and it is eligible for match funds. Pure marketing funds are not eligible for match funds.
How long does it take for Horticulture Australia Limited and the industry advisory committees to approve and give funds to a project? We have an example of an 18-month wait in Victoria for funding, which then the funds weren't forthcoming.
We would always like to be able to turn things over relatively quickly. Relatively quickly does not mean in a matter of weeks. It's somewhere between 3 and 6 months if we can do that.
So 18 months would seem excessive.
18 months would depend on the amount of workbacks that took place with particular project proposals. Nothing is ever as it seems. I would be surprised if a simple proposal that was well written, satisfied all the requirements in the first instance, and was in alignment with the industry strategic plan would take 18 months. So that would be unusual for that to happen.
You are one of the largest rural research and development corporations, and you have very outspoken and dominant members. Should HAL be taking more of a leadership role as it was set up in the Constitution?
That I would have to qualify that by asking or qualifying it by saying that HAL has no leadership role with respect to the industry itself. It has a leadership role with respect to the industry R&D. Although everyone that you ask will always have a different opinion of what HAL is supposed to be, and I think it always depends on your perspective. I think that HAL has an important role to play in facilitating and leading the R&D requirements of industry, and I think it has possible roles it can play in terms of advising both its membership, its industries and government about the big issues.
Cross-industry advisory committees, researchers argue there could be more very valuable research delivered that way. If you look at one of the submissions to the consultation from AusVeg, they would like to see that abolished to save funds. What do you think the strategic role of cross-industry advisory committee is?
I don't speak on behalf of AusVeg, but I think their intent in there was to abolish the committee itself, but not the expenditure. And I think that has merit. It is always hard in the horticultural industry when you have some things as diverse as mushrooms growing inside essentially atmosphere-controlled sheds through to mangoes grown in the Northern Territory to find commonality. And it is one of the great challenges of Horticulture Australia Limited to find that commonality and try to make the most of it. But there are areas that we are continually driving hard to get that commonality. And I suppose the one that's most got publicity recently is the SIT Plus program, the consortium to control fruit fly, which, of course, is not common to all parts of our membership, but is an important part of a large part of our membership.